This is going to be our first meeting, and I want to thank everyone for being here. I know the other two senators had other meetings and commitments there. They'll be joining us shortly. For the record, I'm Floyd Brzozinski. I'll be chairing the Commerce Committee at this point, and we've got a lot on the plate that we'll be looking at. But I think before we go too far on different issues and items, what we should do is have everyone have an opportunity to introduce themselves as members of the committee. And I will complete mine with I am a senator for the Lane County and Douglas County areas or portions thereof. And I'll go to my vice chair.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Senator Roger Beyer, also member of the Commerce Committee, and also have Judiciary and Environment and Land Use, along with a couple other. Unless I think the three of us that are on all the committees, I guess you're not on.
Environment.
Yeah. But so we'll be seeing a lot of each other. I'm from the Moal area, and my district includes parts of Clackamas, Marion, and Lynn counties.
Great.
Glad to be a member.
Great.
Charlie Ringo, senator from Beaverton, Northwest Portland. I'm a fleeing consumer advocate, and I hope we can get some business done, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We'll see if we can have it hot as well.
Good.
Flames.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman. I am Jenny Burdick, and I represent Southwest Portland, Tigard, and King City. And I also am part of the traveling show that moves from Judiciary to this committee on Tuesday and Thursday, and from Judiciary to Environment on Monday and Wednesday.
I'm Senator Doug Whitsett from Senate District 28 that takes in Klamath, Crook, Lake, portions of Deschutes, and Jackson counties. I'm identified as the only true freshman senator here. I'm also a member of the Judiciary, Transportation, and the Education Subcommittee on Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. And then Anna Ron is going to be our committee assistant and
committee administrator.
Excuse me.
And I'd like to introduce.
Boy, am I in trouble.
Karen Schofield, our committee assistant, ABLE committee assistant.
Okay. Yes. Well, I just want to make sure. And for those who are here who have not heard, we do have a reception going on just outside of the hearing room today, so if anyone needs cookies to go with whatever coffee they may have brought into the proceedings or water, they may want to duck out for that. The first order of business that we have in organizational is our committee rules, and I'd ask Anna to walk us through basically what the rules proposal are for us to consider.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you look in your packet, there's a proposed rules for the Senate Commerce Committee. This is the exact same model rules as you've seen in probably all your other Senate committees. I would like to draw your attention to number 5, and this is the method by which the Senate Commerce Committees have to give 48 hours notice in advance, but if we need to carry over a measure, this is the method that we do it. We have to initially post it, but the 48-hour notice, it has to be carried over to the same type of meeting. It has to be declared by the chair at that meeting that we're going to carry it over. And we have to submit a revised agenda as soon as possible after the meeting. And if there's any other questions about the rules, I'll try to answer them.
Are there any questions or discussion regarding what the rules provide for?
Chair, I move we adopt the rules.
We have a motion now to adopt the proposed rules for the Senate Commerce Committee for 2005 legislative session. Is there any discussion? Not hearing any objection to the rules as they've been presented to us. Not hearing any, they will be adopted. At this point, I guess we need to kind of just give an overview. I'd like to make certain, a lot of people ask me what the Commerce Committee will be taking care of or working on this session. It is going to be a committee with some fluidness as to allowing the president to utilize the committee as he deems appropriate. But the major areas that we will be encompassing will include business climate, general labor issues, consumer issues and rights, as well as specifically farm worker labor issues. There will be some different components, such as methamphetamines, as it pertains to the retail sale of the ingredients that are necessary to make methamphetamines. I believe that will also be before us. Identity theft issues, that's non-criminal in the sense of protections that we can give to our citizens. We should also probably count on seeing some of that coming our way as well. The other area that we will be embarking on, which we're going to hear a little bit today from the Department of Consumer and Business Services, will be some different components that they deal with, and one of them is the independent medical exams, which currently are called the insurer's medical exams. I believe that that also will find its way into our committee. A couple of rules that the chair has for our operation. I'd like to make certain that we have the ability to conduct business without being interrupted. Specifically, audible cell phones are going to be, let's say, a no-no. I hope that us as committee members, as well as the professional lobby that will and staff and governmental agents will respect that. And what I would like for them to do is set their phone either into a meeting mode where you will know that you're still getting a call through the vibration type notification, or turn it off while you're in the committee. The chair is going to consider fines for those who might be infringing on our abilities to conduct our business. Any fines that are collected, if they are deemed, will go into a nonprofit, probably following the same course that Senator Winters has put forward for her committee. I will say that we're not going to have the same rule that she has as to no acronyms, but we do hope that witnesses will, in fact, use the full name of the agency or whatever the abbreviation is for, at least at the beginning, so everyone knows, not only here in the committee room, but also on the record, and whoever may be watching us out in TV land or listening to this over the Internet will understand what we're talking about, so everyone can be on the same page. Lastly, the chair does hope that those who come before this committee with written testimony will try to summarize that as best they can and talk from their heart as to what their issues are. This really goes to the lobbyist and the agency personnel as to not reading your testimony. All of us understand that there are going to be numerous individuals that may come before us who feel much more comfortable reading from their testimony. Those individuals definitely will have that opportunity to do that. But one of the things I think, as busy as all of us are, and knowing the time of our meeting being late in the day, that if we can limit the amount of time it takes for testimony to come in, that when it's being submitted in written form, that I think it will be appreciated by all of us on the committee. With that, I guess one other area I wanted to give some heads up to committee members. This Thursday, the January 20th, there will not be a meeting, so you can plan your schedules accordingly. We will be meeting after today. The next meeting will be Tuesday, the 25th. It will, at this point, is scheduled to be a joint meeting with the Senate General Government Committee. It will be here in our hearing room. The purpose for that joint meeting will be for the first portion of the meeting to allow for there to be a discussion regarding the insurer's medical examinations. Senator Shields was chairing the interim general government. We looked at that issue during the interim, and he had some words and wanted to have an opportunity to, address the committee as a whole, as well as I believe we're going to have members from the Department of Consumer and Business Services back here on Tuesday, and we'll kind of get an overview of the issues that we looked at during the interim. My goal is that will take no more than half of our meeting, and we will be scheduling some work, some bills for public hearing that afternoon that will be dealing in the area of the Bureau and, let's see, I'm stumped.
Labor
and Industries. Yeah, BOLI will be coming forward and presenting some of their legislative packet that they have for us. The goal is to get us started on a process of getting familiar with how this committee will work, and then we'll move into more of the high-profile issues as we move into our session. So if there's not any questions at this point, I'd like to go ahead and move us out of the organizational meeting and at this time open an informational meeting and ask the Director Corey Schlesinger with the Department of...
Mr. Chair, you didn't give us time to ask if there were any questions.
You know, I asked and no one answered, so I moved on, but we'll go right back into...
I just want to clarify that the thing on independent medical exams is a week from today. Is that what you said?
What we're going to do is we're going to have a joint meeting with the General Government Committee. Those bills...
A week from today.
A week from today.
Thank you.
With the purpose of just basically handing off the torch of the work that was done during the interim, we will not actually be working any bills as it pertains to the insurer's medical examinations at that time.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to mention that I think in Judiciary, the Judiciary Committee has introduced a bill at my request on the same subject. So we'll need to get together on it. Maybe it should be transferred over here.
I think what will happen is, Senator Ringo, from my understanding, is those bills, even though they're introduced as committee bills, they are going to be reviewed, and my understanding is we should see those coming here.
Good. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
And then before I gavel again, is there any other questions? If not, then I'd like to go ahead and move us back into the informational meeting. And Ms. Schlesinger, please come up and bring whoever else you'd like to have us hear from.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Corey Streisinger, the Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon, although I see my written testimony says this morning. I apologize for that. And to give you a brief overview of the Department of issues particularly relating to consumer protection and the other areas that I believe are going to be within this department's jurisdiction. I'm going to talk specifically about some consumer and worker protection areas and then ask John Schiltz, who's the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, to talk about the workers' compensation system a little. The Department of Consumer and Business Services is the state's largest business regulatory agency, and our mission is to protect and serve Oregon's consumers and workers while supporting a positive business climate in the state. Our major programs are workers' compensation, Oregon OSHA, insurance, building codes, and finance and corporate securities, which contains a whole bunch of programs within it. We also include several smaller programs, the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, the Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Businesses, and the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. And it sounds from the chair's earlier description like quite a number of those areas may come before this committee. We have provided with you with a number of background pieces in a folder which you should have in front of you. I just wanted to briefly show you some of what's in here because it may be useful reference to you later, not only as bills come up, but also if you get constituent inquiries, because a great deal of what we do is work with consumers in helping to solve problems and provide education materials. What you will see in here is, first of all, a who to contact sheet that looks like this that summarizes which programs are handled within which of our divisions and gives you contact information. You'll see a summary of our legislation and then an organizational chart, and we've also provided you with a sampling of some of our consumer-oriented brochures which deal with some of our programs. And we would encourage you, if you have course substantive questions about legislative issues or policy issues, to get in contact with us, but also if we can be of any help to you in meeting your constituents' needs as well. That's something that we do regularly. Our program areas do cover a fairly wide range of topics. We do try to use some consistent principles in how we address them. Some of those are set out on this buff-colored card over on the right hand, which sets out sort of how we go about being a consumer protection and regulatory agency. We try to listen and make sure that we're focusing on real problems that our constituents really suffer from. We want to focus on improving outcomes for consumers and workers, not just on process. We want to have a regulatory program that imposes the minimum regulatory burden that's also consistent with achieving those outcomes for consumers and workers. And we use quite a variety of approaches, regulation, enforcement, but also education, consultation, and so on. I'd like to start talking briefly about some insurance issues, because that is one of our major consumer protection arenas. In insurance, we focus on three major areas: the financial solvency of insurance companies to make sure that assets are available to pay a claim when one is due, the affordability and availability of insurance to make sure that the insurance buying public can get the protection they need, and then finally the fair treatment of consumers. And it's that third area which I'm going to touch on briefly today. We enforce compliance with insurance laws and the fair treatment of the insurance buying public, and we also work with consumers to resolve insurance-related complaints. Our consumer advocacy staff responds to about 20,000 consumer inquiries every year and also addresses about 5,000 consumer complaints where we would actually engage with the insurance company in trying to solve the problem. And then we also use that information to try to identify trends and problem areas beyond trying to resolve the specific issue that an individual consumer might be experiencing. Sometimes an issue can be addressed by rulemaking. Sometimes it's a statutory matter. One area that's been the subject of rulemaking this past biennium has been suitability with respect to life insurance and annuities. You may have heard the phrase that these products are sold rather than bought. They can have high first-year commissions. They can have high surrender charges. And we did become aware of some significant issues. An example is an 83-year-old woman who was convinced to replace her existing annuity with a very similar annuity that resulted in a $17,000 surrender charge on her $125,000 product.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I could interject, I was just going to ask on that example, what action were you able to take? What penalty were you able to levy?
Well, under our new rules, which went into effect January 1st, 2005, the answer is we would be able to take substantial action. We had very little ability to take action under the rules in place prior to that time. The new rules will actually prohibit the seller of an insurance, life insurance or annuity product from selling a product without reasonable grounds to believe that the product is not unsuitable for the consumer, and I apologize for that double negative, but that is how the rule is phrased, so that the seller would have to actually gather information about the consumer's age, financial situation, insurance objectives, and then similar to the securities law, where the suitability concept is very well known, a product that was not suitable for that consumer could not actually be sold to that consumer. That wasn't the case before.
Follow up, Mr. Chair,
please.
So it was your own rulemaking. It became effective January 1st that...
That's correct.
Tightens the system?
That's correct. That's an area where we had the rulemaking ability and we exercised it.
Okay.
Thank you. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Burke.
Thank you. Just for curiosity, did you need a statutory change to do that rule, and if not, why wasn't it done sooner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, we believe that we have the statutory authority, and as to why that issue wasn't done, wasn't addressed earlier, we really within the last several years have shifted to a focus on trying to identify problem trends and address them more aggressively. So I cannot identify for you why that issue wasn't identified sooner. What I can say is we did identify the problem and move forward with it.
Thank you.
Senator Whitson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. How would you define suitability?
The phrase, Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, is defined by case law in the securities area. And what we would ask, what we ask for is that the person selling has to have reasonable grounds to believe that the product is not unsuitable for the consumer. I cannot give you a checklist type of definition because it's case by case. For example, it would clearly not be suitable to sell someone a tax-advantaged product for placement in an IRA. It would not be suitable to sell an elderly person a product that has a schedule of annual payments, which, given the person's life expectancy, would be very questionable whether they would deliver anywhere close to the premium payment value for that person. It would not be suitable to sell someone a product essentially identical to a product they already had with a very high exchange cost. So those are examples that I can give you, but it is a case-by-case determination.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Please continue.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, another area that we are also in the process of addressing by rule rather than statute is that of long-term care insurance. It's a product that can be a very important part of long-term planning, but there are ways that we can make the product a better value for purchasers. Our rules, which are not finalized yet, are going to address making those products more portable. So, for example, if the type of care changes, that the product would still be usable even though the type of care provisions that might have been in place the time the product was issued may not be the universe. Or if someone moves to a different state which has a different type of care system, that they would still be able to use the product. That if the market changes, they would have the ability to buy up or buy down so as not to forfeit the policy. So that's just another example of something which we're also addressing by rule. But there are a number of other of areas where I think the issues are going to be in front of the legislature and either due to existing law or because it would require law to take action. During this past interim, we worked on assisting to implement the credit scoring legislation that was passed last session. And under that legislation, insurers are now prohibited from using credit history to cancel insurance for an existing policy or increase rates for current policyholders, but credit scoring can still be used in the initial placement. Now, I will tell you that we now hear far fewer complaints from consumers on credit scoring issues than we did prior to that legislation being passed, but there are consumer groups who are interested in moving further, and we do hear from those involved in, for example, the homeowners insurance market that there are still issues arising, and there are also some technical issues in implementing that bill that may need a fix that we would come back to you with. So we do expect there will be continued discussion of credit scoring issues. Another area that we've heard a great deal of consumer concern about this past interim is homeowners insurance. And one of our bills, Senate Bill 118, which I believe is before this committee, grew out of what we heard. Oregon's fortunate to have a really robust homeowners insurance market. We have a lot of carriers in this market, and insurance is pretty affordable. But we did hear from consumers about a number of concerns and problems, mostly arising from insurance companies' use of national claims databases, which track prior claims not only made by the particular homeowner, but also by prior owners of the house. So these could be situations where there was a claim by a prior owner and a repair was made, but the claim is still in the history that would pop up. And using these databases, we heard that insurers were canceling or substantially increasing rates for homeowners based on relatively insignificant claims activity or sometimes simply inquiries that didn't result in a paid claim. So Senate Bill 118 would address these concerns that we heard by establishing a series of new consumer rights, including the right to know when an insurer is using a claims database, the right to correct mistakes in the database, a prohibition on penalizing consumers for making inquiries that don't result in claims, some limitations on types of claims that could be used against the consumer, and limitations on cancellations. And one specific area that is also in a separate bill being proposed by the Department of Human Services, and that is the right not to be denied insurance on the basis of having an adult foster care facility in your home. That doesn't address the issue of insurance for that business activity, which is a separate matter, but what this provision would say is you can't be denied homeowner's insurance just because of that business in your home. There's another major area in the issue in the area of insurance on which we've heard a number of complaints, and this is an area that we've discussed with Senator Ringo in particular, and that is the issue of total loss for autos. And we every year hear from hundreds of consumers whose vehicles have been totaled and who don't believe that they are getting a fair price from the insurer. For the past decade or so, insurers have relied primarily on two national databases, which are funded by the insurance industry, to generate the values for those totaled vehicles. And we get a lot of confusion and a lot of dissatisfaction from consumers about the outcomes of those use of those databases. So although we don't have a bill on this issue, we have been looking into different ways to address it, And there are some proposals on the table, including, for example, using Kelley Blue Book or other independent sources to have as the source of the value when vehicles are totaled.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I could just expand on that for a second. Joel Ario, I've talked about this both with Richard Streisinger and Joel Ario, the insurance administrator, about how to handle this. And they have made a proposal to me, Mr. Ario is working with legislative counsel in drafting that legislation.
Great.
So they won't be introducing a bill. I probably will if we can get the concept worked out. And I'd love to bring it to this committee.
That'd be fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, next I'd like to move to some of the consumer protection issues that we deal with in our Division of Financed Corporate Securities. And in this area, we oversee state-chartered financial institutions, banks and credit unions. We enforce securities laws, and we also regulate a variety of other types of financially related businesses, such as mortgage lenders, consumer finance companies, pawn brokers, pre-need funeral trusts, money transmitters, and the like. And we, as with insurance, we monitor financial solvency, we regulate to ensure compliance with consumer protection standards, and we are also heavily involved with public education. A major area of interest for us recently has been the proliferation of payday loans. You've undoubtedly seen the storefronts. The number of licensees in this area has grown phenomenally over the past few years. These are very short-term loans, sometimes 2 weeks, sometimes 30 days, with fees on a transaction basis, which can translate into annual percentage rates of several hundred percent. We have stepped up enforcement of existing laws in this area, and we also did a detailed review of how these loans are used. And what we found is that often they are a source of cash for people who have urgent needs and no other source of the cash, which could be somebody who's paid once a month and who has their car breaks down or they have a medical bill. So there's clearly a need for access to short-term small loans, but we've done some thinking about what we can do to ensure that those needs are met, but also address some of the concerns. One of the things we've done is worked with the credit union industry. Credit unions, of course, have a nonprofit status and are expected to serve their community, and a number of credit unions in response have in fact stepped forward and offered payday loan type of products themselves for their members, which have interest rates that are much more akin to what you would pay on a credit card rather than the several hundred percent that the payday lending industry offers. We've done some consumer education. You'll see in your packet a new payday lending brochure, which all payday lenders are going to be required to make available, which gives consumers some just basic information about alternatives and about who to contact with complaints. We have not introduced any payday lending proposals this session, but we understand that a number of them may be coming in from other stakeholders, and we'll be very interested in assisting in that discussion. I should mention briefly, in this area, we do have a couple bills also to strengthen our enforcement powers in some areas such as mortgage lending and pawn brokers and the selling of franchises. Those are Senate Bill 120 and Senate Bill 121, but I believe they have been assigned to Senate Business rather than this committee. You mentioned the area of identity theft, and that is also an area where we have quite an interest. The financial institutions that we regulate have an interest, and we are happy to be of service if we can in dealing with any issues that may arise. We do tend to keep an eye on those. I'm not planning to spend any time discussing our building codes division unless you have questions, although in building codes we do work on safety issues, and an example during this interim that Senator Walker has been extremely involved in has been wired glass in school gyms, for example. So there are a variety of areas there which, I don't know whether they would be this committee's jurisdiction or not, but I wanted to just make you aware that we're happy to assist in those areas as well.
I'm glad that you're going to hold off on that, because I think that might be going into the business committee. I think Senator Mexers is going to be handling the building code component.
In that case, the final area that I'm planning to address is Oregon OSHA. And through Oregon OSHA, we administer a state plan for occupational safety and health that has to meet federal standards and be approved by the federal government. And so we promulgate health and safety rules and standards, and we enforce those standards through inspections and accident investigations. And in addition, we have active consultation and training programs through which we work with employers and workers on a voluntary basis to help that make their workplaces safer. We also have we have split jurisdiction over farm labor camps, which you mentioned as an area. Bureau of Labor and Industries is very involved, but there are some aspects of farm labor camps which involve Oregon as well, so I wanted to flag that as well. Workplace injury and illness rates have continued to decline this biennium. The severity of injuries has decreased as well, and that has significant implications for, of course, the health and safety of Oregon workers. Our goal is to have people leave the workplace as healthy and safe as when they walked in the morning. And also, of course, there are implications for our workers' compensation system, which Mr. Schultz is going to talk about in a moment. Some of our projects in Oregon OSHA have included providing a core rules, short and easy to understand manual of safety rules, primarily for use by small employers, and also an expansion of our outreach and educational efforts aimed at those for whom Spanish is their primary language. We have only one Oregon OSHA bill that we are proposing this session. That's House Bill 2093, which is intended to reduce the number of employers to whom we are required to send letters notifying them of an increased likelihood of inspection. These letters go primarily to small employers who happen to be in high hazard industries. In fact, very few of them are in a position or have criteria that would justify an inspection. So they receive these letters, which cause confusion and concern and really serve no substantial purpose. So part of our regulatory streamlining agenda includes a change to that statutory provision. If you have questions about anything I've covered so far, I would be happy to answer them. Or, of course, after Mr. Schultz's presentation, I'd be happy to answer questions as well.
Any questions at this point? If not...
Actually, Mr. Chair, yes. I do have a question. I think we passed the bill last session to let iron workers not have scaffolding on the, you know what I mean?
Yes.
A distance limitation.
Fall protection, Mr. Chair.
Fall protection. Thank you for providing me the correct phrase. Do you have any sense of how that's working out, whether that's caused problems in terms of worker safety?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, I do not. I am not aware of any instances of accidents, at least serious accidents, that would be affected by that rule, but our experience has been fairly brief thus far. I'd be happy to double-check and get back to you. And I also I believe that it's our intent to gather data and report in once we've had several years of experience under our belt. But I will double-check on that.
A number of people, including the follow-up, Mr. Chairman, numbers of people, including myself, were very concerned that it was an override of an OSHA safety rule. And it causes problems. I'd certainly like to find out sooner rather than later.
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, we will. I will double-check and we'll let you know.
Okay. Any other questions? No.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Schultz, Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, and it's my pleasure to be here today. The Workers' Compensation Division, as Corey indicated, is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and we do anticipate that workers' compensation will be in front of you in the legislature this session. Today I plan to just present very briefly to you. I wanted to talk briefly about the recent history of reform in our workers' compensation system. I think that's a very important issue not to forget about as we go into the session. Also, to give a brief overview of the Management Labor Advisory Committee, or MLAC's, legislative agenda and what they're working on, as well as the department's workers' compensation legislative agenda. I've provided written testimony, and I won't sit here and read that to you at your request. I think you can read it for yourself, but I will make a couple of points. Reform was necessary in Oregon's workers' compensation system because by the late 1980s, we were the sixth highest cost workers' compensation system in the nation. And frankly, we weren't getting very good benefits for the price. The benefits to workers were significantly less than what we were seeing in a lot of other states. I've characterized this as we were a mile wide and an inch deep in terms of a system at that time. The legislature passed major reform bills through several of the previous sessions, including the 1990 special session on workers' compensation. These reform bills have made significant changes to Oregon's workers' compensation system. We are now the 42nd highest in terms of premium, which is very good. We're on the good end of the cost for employers. This has resulted in savings, direct savings to employers and saved workers' compensation premiums of over $10 billion since 1990. There are several other issues that have improved for workers, and I do list them in my testimony. Just a couple that I'll touch on is that some specific benefits, including temporary total disability benefits, which are replacement for wages when a worker is disabled from work, have been increased. Permanent partial disability benefits to workers, and that's a compensation when a worker suffers a permanently disabling injury or occupational disease. Those have been increased for workers. So I think the point here is we are in a position to say that while we have lowered costs significantly here in Oregon, we've also increased benefits to workers, and I think that's something that's very remarkable and wanted to make sure that you knew about that. Corey indicated that workers are suffering fewer work-related injuries and fatalities in Oregon, and just a couple of statistics I'm going to lay on you because I think that really something to be proud of is that occupational injuries and illnesses that result in time away from work have dropped by 43% since the late 1980s. Work-related fatalities have dropped 33% since the late 1980s. The time that a worker has to spend away from work due to a work-related injury on average was 98 days in 1990. It's down to 61 days in 2002. So we're making progress on a broad front. Part of this is because of an act that the legislature took in 1990, which was to create the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee. And this committee was created by the legislature to advise the legislature and the governor, as well as the director, on workers' compensation policy issues, to provide a forum for addressing what are often very technical and, yes, sometimes very contentious workers' compensation issues. MLAC is made up of governor-appointed and Senate-confirmed representatives of employers and labor. MLAC reviews issues through holding public meetings, discussions, and then makes recommendations to you, the legislature, about bills. Attached to my testimony, you'll find a piece about the mission of MLAC and what they do, as well as some legislation that they either supported or actually developed, and then that the legislature has passed just over the last couple of sessions in regard to workers' compensation. MLAC does have a legislative agenda this session. They worked very hard during the interim in three pretty large areas. One is in the area of return to work programs, and that's in order to address better helping workers get back to work. Another area was permanent total disability, in order to address current statutory thresholds for workers to qualify as permanently totally disabled and to amend the current reconsideration process of that status. And finally, on and Mr. Chair, you mentioned this earlier, on insurer medical examinations. This has been an issue that's been talked about quite a bit here in the legislature through the interim and as well as at MLAC. MLAC's been working on that in order to ensure these examinations are fair and non-biased. I have attached a summary of some of that work that MLAC has done with this testimony, and I think we'll have a chance to get into each of these bills probably in some detail in the near future. I also wanted to just touch on that we also are forwarding some workers' compensation bills of this session. There's SB 119, which relates to return to work programs. We expect that this bill will become the MLAC vehicle for their return to work amendments that they want to make. The bill basically does a couple of things, which I note in my testimony, written testimony to you. The most of what MLAC worked on, frankly, we're going to be able to take care of in administrative rules. But there are a couple of statutory issues that need to be looked at. There's also Senate Bill 172, which I call our workers' compensation technical cleanup. It seems like every session we have a few things that we need to clean up in the workers' compensation arena. This one does three things. It gives the department authority to issue civil penalties for violations of statute. Right now, the current law does not allow us to do that. We are allowed to issue penalties for violation of administrative rules, which means we end up copying statute into our administrative rules in order to be able to enforce that. And we want to streamline our administrative rules. So that's the basis for asking for this. Another technical area is to actually change one word in the statute later to earlier in order to eliminate some delays in an administrative reconsideration order process regarding permanent partial disability benefits. And finally, we're going to ask that you eliminate what we consider to be an obsolete provision of the statute, which requires employers to come to the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to ask the director to select a physician if they want to do a pre-employment physical. To our knowledge, there has never been any request to do this. No one has ever utilized that part of the statute. A third bill will start over on the House side, and it's related to regulatory streamlining. And it's a request to transfer review of workers' compensation-related administrative orders from the Office of Administrative Hearing to the Workers' Compensation Board. Currently, appeals of administrative actions that we take can go both ways, and we just want to clean up that so it's very simple for practitioners. Frankly, we have attorneys calling us confused. They're not sure where to file appeals, and so they're filing in both arenas. In conclusion, in terms of my prepared testimony, the workers' compensation system here in Oregon has gone through tremendous transformation over the last 15 years. It is looked on as a model by many other states. It is something that we can be very proud of here. We've been very successful in lowering premium costs while increasing benefits to workers. This session, you're going to see continued requests to make progress on workers' compensation policy issues. We are here to assist in any way that we can on that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. I know I went through that at a pretty quick pace. I'd be glad to answer any questions I can.
Questions from the committee? You did a great job.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for giving us the overview and insight. I know that our committee will see both of you on probably numerous occasions, and we welcome you to being here today and look forward to having you in the future giving us your expertise so we can do the work of the people.
Thank you very much.
Well, in conclusion, I think for today, I just want to go over a couple of reminders. This Thursday, we will not have a committee meeting. For your calendaring, as the President has stated, we are going to be on the road on Fridays in different components or different committees. The Commerce Committee has been given two dates certain, which is March 11th and April 22nd. There is a possibility for a third meeting on February 4th, which is going to be here very quickly. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to put something together at this point. I'll be working with Senator Beyer and locating where we're going to be meeting for the two meetings that we know we're going to have and see what else we might be covering. So if committee members have any thoughts as to suggestions as to what you might want to see covered, what we're trying to do or will try to do is actually have a meeting that would be here on the Thursday of the week that we're traveling for the Friday meeting, and then tying it together. The only thing is, if we do any traveling over the to the east side of the state, I would think that we'll probably actually use that Thursday as a travel time, depending on the distance and location that we're going to be. So we'll be open for our suggestions as to what we might be wanting to cover in those areas, and so please let me know individually or as a group at some point. There is a sheet that Anna put out for us. It's the member chart. Understand that this is a work in progress, so if you have a chance to look at it, if you see anything that needs to be updated, modified, please let Anna know at your earliest convenience. And I think the last thing, Senator Beyer brought this up earlier, all five of us are on the Judiciary Committee, which meets right before this meeting, starting at 1, and I know that with Judiciary, we'll be needing to sometimes run the meeting right up to the time of conclusion, if not maybe continuing into that. What I'd like to try to do is, for efficiency, try to get here as quick as we can, so we can get started shortly after 3 o'clock, knowing that there's a few things that each of us will probably need to do in between leaving that meeting and coming to this one. My goal as a chair is to conduct the business that we need to conduct and move on and get back to our other duties, so we won't be meeting just to meet. So any other thoughts, comments, pleasures? If not, then we'll adjourn for today and see you next Tuesday.